This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby podcast with me, Will Slattery, and Luke Fitzgerald.
As far as I can see, I always want to get in the Irish team. And that should be every young player's dream and ambition in this country. And if you're playing in a place where you're not going to get the opportunities in the big games, that they're the ones that get you picked. They are the ones, the Champions Cup games are the ones that get you picked. You need to be playing in a team and starting in a team for those games. It's as simple as that if you want to play in the Irish team.
Every week on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish independent podcast.
Dublin just retreated, giving Roscommon the ball, and then Roscommon scored. I just thought that was very strange. Like, there was so long in that period of play that somebody didn't take a bit of leadership and say, well, whatever with anything, go out and foul them, stop the momentum, but you're not bloody doing that in our home turf. And that would be worrying from a Dublin point of view if that's the way they're going to let teams play.
The All-Ireland series is now fully up and running with every team having played their opening game, and there's not much to separate them of the four matches up for decision over the weekend. Two ended all square, while the other two had just a kick of the ball between the sides. Dublin were held to a surprise draw at Croke Park by Roscommon, while Monaghan kicked a late score to tie things up against Derry. All that and more is up for discussion on today's episode of the Throwin' Football Show. Will Slattery here, and I'm delighted to be joined by Dick Clerken and Dunica Boyle. And Dick, we might start with that game in Croke Park yesterday. Dublin were installed as the All-Ireland favourites by the bookies after Kerry's defeat to Mayo last weekend. From what you saw in their game against Roscommon, is that status justified?
Yeah, as I've seen that written this morning, I certainly wouldn't have them as favourites. So maybe, listen, the bookies would always reflect and they just sort of go where the money's going as opposed to who are the sort of standout team. I certainly wouldn't have them as All-Ireland favourites outright, certainly not. And I think yesterday's game sort of validates that. I think they're one of probably half a dozen, if even eight teams now that are very much in the mix, you know, no more, no less. I think they're probably slightly towards the top end just because of Croke Park experience and a lot of calibre in their team. But the reality is, and we've said it consistently over this year and last year, they're just not the Jim Gavin team. Their star players are just getting that bit older, and with that, consistency is an issue. And I know that from my playing days, and a new crop coming through just aren't at the same level to replace them. And they're going to get performances like they did yesterday when they meet a team in Roscommon that came up to Croke Park with a game plan, with a bit of intensity, and didn't show them any respect. And you could see that in the way they tackled and were in Dublin's faces, and Dublin just didn't like it. And they probably just didn't respond in a way that you sort of would think an All-Ireland favourite, if that's what they've been called, should. And they were probably, yeah, they probably were fortunate to get, I think a draw was probably fair. You know, Dublin could have eked it out. They did get a bit of a fortuitous goal to pull them back in when they were trailing the whole game. But that's probably just where Dublin are at. You know, Roscommon are a good sort of top tier team now, and when they put in a performance, it's going to take a good performance to beat them. Dublin didn't bring it yesterday, didn't beat them, and I think a draw was a fair result.
Yeah, Dunica, I don't think Roscommon have won in Croke Park since 1980, I think, was the stat that was going around. So they were very close yesterday. But it's a massive milestone for them. They'd taken some big trimmings off Dublin in the Super 8 era. I think there was back-to-back years where Dublin won by, you know, 15 points or so both games. So massive statement for them to even get a draw. I know they probably would have been very disappointed, but to go up and put in that kind of performance.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably two things at play here. Dick is right. Like, Dublin are probably still being judged by the standards of Dublin of old, and they are just not that. They're still All-Ireland contenders, absolutely, but they're just not the team they were. And the other side of that is that Roscommon this year and under Davy Burke have had a level of consistency from the very first game against Tyrone in the league, which I covered. They were excellent. And they've maintained that all the way through. With the game against Galway, who beat them. But otherwise, they've been really, really good. And I suppose what we do is we've talked a lot about Roscommon over the last few years. And we've said, like, you know, they have a great range of forwards. The envy of many counties, you know, some of the players they have and the fellas they can bring off the bench. But Davy Bourke made the point after one of the games I covered in the Hyde this year. He says, like, defensively, they've been really good. And he actually broke down, I think it was three goals they conceded during the league. And he pinpointed two of them as being straight up Roscommon mistakes. And the third one was a goal from David Clifford. He says, yeah, look, they've just done us there. They picked us apart. So defensively, they've been excellent. And maybe that's been overlooked because we always looked at the depth of forward talent they have. But like 12 scores against Dublin yesterday in Croke Park, to concede 12 scores, 1-11, wasn't it? So, and there was a little bit of fortune or whatever, you know, that ball could have broken anyway for the goal. So, you know, I think that's the underpin of any good team. They're defensively solid. Kerry won it last year based on a solid defence. And Roscommon have a very, very solid setup now. And that makes them a very tough nut to crack, I think.
Yeah, Dick, just on the Dublin piece of what Dunica said, like scoring 1-11 yesterday and then against Kildare, they had quite a meagre total as well. I don't recall off the top of my head. I think it was 14 points or so. And then sandwiching between that, you have the Louth game where they kind of cut loose. It's kind of funny that it's the same team because they had very little attacking thrust yesterday against Kildare. It was the same. And yet in between that against Louth, the team who, you know, ran Cork close, have been quite competitive. They looked, you know, very good in attack. Like, what do you put that inconsistency down to?
Well, you have a combination of things. Like, if Paul Mannion, again, he's just lacking game time. He just hasn't showed glimpses of the Paul Mannion of old. But I think he drew a blank yesterday and was pulled aside, you know, with a poor performance by his standards. I think Kieran Kilkenny, and again, you have to be fair and caveat these comments with what these guys have in the locker. Like Kieran Kilkenny to try and, yeah, as he has been for the last best part of a decade, that sort of pivot and leader on the 40 for Dublin just isn't getting up to that level consistently enough. And yesterday was another game like that. So again, these go-to guys, you know, Dean Rock is now a peripheral player. These go-to guys that they had, they're just not getting up there. And even Colm O'Callaghan, you know, we just see glimpses of him. He's not that sort of, you couldn't just sort of, it was two or three years ago, it was him and David Clifford were on a par as the two outstanding forwards. It'd be hard to make a case for Colm based on his consistency of performance or lack of consistency of performance. So they're just probably not getting enough off from the real, their tier one talent. And that's probably where they're falling down. You know, they're still, you know, from a panel, they're as strong as they are. But in terms of setting them out ahead, they're just not getting enough consistency. And that'd be a concern because they're as we get on into the summer, there's less and less margin for error. Yeah, they'll get through the group stages. It's not a guarantee that they'll finish top. They'll go into a knockout game. And when there's that doubt, they're going to be meeting good teams now. As you say, that when you get to that last eight teams, which is real championship knockout, there's very little between those sides. And Jim Gavin really need to be figuring out, Desi Farr really need to be figuring out his best 15 because it's hard to say what that is at the minute.
Early in the year, I think we all would have said it at one stage or another that Dublin now will be very different come the Dublin of June. And so if there was any little hiccups along the way and maybe games that didn't play well in that Division 2 campaign or even in Leinster, you know, you could always make that excuse from, look, they're looking forward down the line, It's not quite bingo for them yet, but it's getting fairly close to it. So you would have been expecting them to be sort of ramping it up at this stage, and maybe the Loud game I think will go down as a bit of an aberration and it might reflect more on how Loud affected the game than where Dublin were at that particular point in time. But I think, yeah, it's getting close to where Dublin need to be coming. And Dick's point is well made. It's the people who will decide Dublin season is going to be the Kilkennys and the Cons and the Mannions and James McCarthy. And they're the fellas who are going to decide. It's their form that will Dublin's season will hinge on. And if they can get them up and running, they'll be fine. And they'll probably be in an Ireland semi-final or final. But if not, you know, they're a big scalp for everyone out there at the minute. Like they're not what they were, but they carry that big puncher's tag, and I think everyone will be wound up for them, like, and be ready for them in much in the way Roscommon were yesterday. But as I said earlier, like, Roscommon are a proper team now, and that shouldn't be overlooked. You know, it shouldn't be. I wouldn't like people to take from this, like, how did plucky Roscommon get a draw with Dublin? It's not that anymore. I think Roscommon have made that step this year. I think they've been consistent. They've been doing it since January, so I think we have to accept, as Dick says, that they're a top in that bracket of team that, you know, can take out a big team on a day.
Yeah, if you take one, just one piece of play yesterday as a sort of an example of where Dublin are at now versus where they were in their pomp. That period before half time, I think Roscommon held on to the ball for something like 5 minutes, I think it was, and actually end up with a score. Like, think about that. Like, Roscommon, the underdog, going up to Dublin's home turf and Dublin allowing them the ball for 5 minutes to do what they did. And they were behind at that stage. I find that you'd be very concerned from a Dublin manager that somebody out there didn't say, well, whatever's happened here, lads, these guys aren't coming up here and throwing the ball around for 5 minutes and getting the sort of the crowd against us and sapping all the motivation. Like, the Dublin Vole, I remember playing those guys in the pomp back in sort of 15 and 16. The minute you got the ball around the middle, you could be guaranteed there was somebody breathing down your neck, and generally in packs around the middle of the pitch, not around the 45. If you got up there, you were doing well because they were on top of you. The Brogans, these guys, they were drilled into them to work that first line of the defence from like the defence of 65, that middle third. That was just hell for leather in there. Whereas yesterday, Dublin just retreated, giving Roscommon the ball, and then Roscommon scored. I just thought that was very strange. Like, there was so long in that period of play that somebody didn't take a bit of leadership and say, well, whatever, but anything, go out and foul them, stop the momentum, but you're not bloody doing that in their home turf. And that would be worrying from a Dublin point of view if that's the way they're going to let teams play.
I think everyone has learned from Dublin in that way, Dick, haven't they? Because Dublin were masters at keeping the ball and controlling the rhythm and dictating the pace of the thing. And now they've been doing it for years and they did it so well. The teams now are willing to learn, are willing to wait for the right chance. So if they have to keep the ball for 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, it's not an issue anymore. You know, I think when maybe 7 or 8 years ago, you know, not going forward or not making inroads would have been like seen as a negative thing. Now it's there like, well, there's nothing there. Let's go back, go again. Let's move it over and back. And it's the Dublin template to some extent.
Absolutely. For the opposition, if they choose to do that, but Dublin don't have to allow them to do it. That's my point. Like, Dublin, when they seen Roscommon going to play like that, they could have said, right, we're not going to let them do that. We're going to push up. We're going to, like, we'll get to in a minute in the Derry-Monaghan game and how Monaghan learned from the first game. When they set off, let Derry have the ball, throw it around and pick off the scores. On Saturday night, Monaghan said, no, we're pushing up. We're going to engage you higher up the pitch. We're not going to let you throw it around at your ease to set up scores. So that's why it was that Dublin decided, well, we're going to step off and let Roscommon do what they want to do. And that's the, sort of the game that had played out. Very un-Dublin-like. And as I said, they're not going to win All-Irelands against better teams than Roscommon doing that in Croke Park.
But it's a bit of a catch-22 there in that moment, because if you do push out, you're opening up that space that Roscommon are waiting for. So,
and maybe that, That tells a point. Like, back in the day, they put their faith in Fitzsimons, Philly McMahon, the boys at the back, to do a job themselves. They didn't need that protection. Maybe Keane O'Sullivan dropped back as a bit of a sweeper. But I always said back in the day, you go back to those Dublin games, the amount of space that they left in behind, but the back themselves, they said, we're going to play the game further up the pitch and the boys further back will mind their own house. Maybe they just don't have the confidence, the boys back there now, and they're given that cliff. So maybe it's a sign of where Dublin are at, that they can't play on the front foot as much as they did before.
And I have an interesting game against Kildare, I think, at Kilkenny this Saturday, a bit of a grudge match after Glenn Ryan's comments earlier in the championship. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes, if it's along similar lines to their close game in the Leinster semi-final earlier in the campaign. Yeah, Dick, you mentioned the Derry-Monaghan game there, another intriguing draw from the weekend. As you touched on, the first game in the Ulster Championship, Derry were probably a good bit better, but it was much more keenly contested at the weekend. Either team could have won it. Carl O'Connell came up, one of your old teammates, and kicked a great score to level it. What did you make of the game?
It was great. Like, they weren't a good bit better the last day. Like, if you remember me, I caught a fairly despondent figure after the first game 4 weeks ago, like, because Monaghan were just so off the pace and Derry just were so good that day. It was a combination of Derry being excellent just at peak performance and Monaghan just getting a lot of things wrong. And I think Vinny was fairly sanguine after that game and admitted that just got matchups wrong, they got their tactics wrong, and they paid a heavy price. Now, it's fairly evident in the 4 weeks that Vinny and the management team done a lot of homework and have studied Derry, you know, in terms of their collective play and the key matchups. Now, they probably had to hedge their bets a wee bit because it could have been Armagh equally the way the Ulster final went, but it was always likely to be Derry that they were facing, and they just got their homework right. And I've wrote a column that's coming out today, and I've just talked on that. This game was won on the line as much as the players out on the pitch, because, you know, if you take Brendan Rodgers and Connor Glass, who going into the game on Saturday were for me the standout midfield pairing in the championship to date and have been just almost unmarkable in terms of their dominance and scoring ability. Probably the poorest game that those two players have had in a long time, not just this year, last year. And that was to do with the matchups that Vinny, you know, Carl O'Connor, not only getting up the pitch and gaining yards and kicking points, he closed down Brendan Rodgers, which was really a phenomenal performance from Carl at his age. So it was a really good day's work for Vinny and the Monaghan players, because we weren't too sure where they were at after that. I was probably, there was a question mark, you know, have they got the panel, have they got the depth to really make a challenge? And I think, you know, Brian McInnes came back into the fold with his massive player is just made for modern day football in terms of getting up and down the pitch and especially against Derry. A few big calls. Tuck didn't start, Conor McManus or Jack McCarron. And in some ways it's sad, and it's a sad indictment of the modern game that those two players, you know, the best forwards Monaghan have in terms of scoring, can't get their game because just the game plan needs something different. But it worked. And there's no point in saying otherwise. And it is a pity, but I think those two players are going to have a big say later on because there'll be different challenges. But on Saturday night, Vinny and them just got it right. And question mark now in the absence of Rory Gallagher, are Derry going to be at the same pitch? Because they just seem to lack something on Saturday night. And you just wonder now, is that going to have a telling effect as the season goes on, you know?
I think there's a hangover from the Ulster final, wasn't there, Will? It seems to be, like, if you look at Armagh as well, like, you know, they were blessed to beat Westmeath. I watched a lot of it in GAA Go, and they just seemed to be a little bit off it all the time, all the way through. They didn't look like the team they were in the Ulster final or even close to it. And maybe there was a little bit of that with Derry too. But the point on Monaghan is, like, I think a lot of people expected a little bit of transition. I think even you might have said it on one of these podcasts,
yeah.
Dick, that,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'm looking at the team here as we're talking. Darren Hughes came off the bench. Kieran Hughes came off the bench. Jack McCarron came off the bench. Conor McManus came off the bench. Four sort of pillars of the team for the last decade or so. And like, Monaghan's a small county, 60-odd thousand people. Football is king, but it's still a shallow pool to be pulling from in terms of, you know, the inter-county game. But they're still a Division One county. They're still, you know, a force to be reckoned with. I don't think they're going to win in All-Ireland now, but they are absolutely still a tough nut for anyone to crack. And they keep reinventing themselves and getting the most out of themselves, despite sort of scarce resources. So, and like, we have the resources talk the whole time, but I think Monaghan are a good example to counties of what can be done. If you have good structures, good coaching, a core of good players, and then it seems like those lads have been there forever, but slowly but surely these other lads have been coming in and sort of picking up the baton, and all of a sudden they can start a championship game without those four fellas and be competitive and draw with the Ulster, the back-to-back Ulster champions. They're doing really, but
Dunnick, I know I've made a call it out here. I get sick of that old, those old platitudes and it's patronising. I'm not saying you're patronising, Monaghan, but that's an easy trope to roll out. We didn't say that about Roscommon. Like, Roscommon's not a bloody, you know, we don't say Armagh don't have massively more resources. I think Monaghan, and I'm always pushing it much, you know, judge them on the merits, you know, park all the other stuff, right? Monaghan have enough resources and enough good players and enough experience. In the same way as when we lose games that we shouldn't lose, it shouldn't be an easy out because, they're doing well, they're punching above their weight. No, that was a game. Like, and there's been lots of games that Monaghan have lost over the years that they shouldn't have. They were better than they were. So Monaghan panel, they're Division 1 on merit. They're Division 1, and I always try to call them out on that and not make excuses because all the boys are old.
Well, I suppose, you know, as you know, I went to school in Monaghan, and when I was coming up, say, in the 90s, they were just unmapped. Do you know what I mean? It was so from the Monaghan then.
Oh, I know that. We know that.
Fanatical aunties and uncles who went to games followed them.
Absolutely.
I remember being in Wexford games and like at Monaghan matches.
That's right.
And like there were like maybe there'd be a couple of dozen people at it.
I started. I started that.
Yeah,
you don't need to tell me. You know.
Yeah, but to where they are now and what they keep doing, and if you look at my own county of Meath, which is all of the things you might want, and yet they can't seem to crack the nut at all. So it's not to be sniffed at, because as you say, it's only 20 years since we're at the other end.
No, but to me, that's a separate conversation. Like that's separate. Like, as I say, we're here to talk about the games at Monaghan panel.
Yeah, but if you're not doing your business right consistently, Dick, if you're not doing your business right consistently and you're not putting things together, like even the off-pitch thing, if you're not putting things together like the center of excellence there, if you're not doing things like they have three or four venues to use as a National League home games, venues, Castleblaney, like Monaghan are doing their business really well. And that they is
always have
that, and that is ringing out on the pitch.
Sorry, you're correct. And there's a couple of things Monaghan have done well that sort of then allows you to bring that sort of level of performance that they typically, and I still would say they always have the best players in the county. Club players playing county football. So it's not like a lot of counties that have half a dozen boys sitting that they don't commit. So they're always getting the best out and front foot forward. But I suppose what you have as well is like you have a young, like we talked about Davy Burke at Roscommon, you have a young management team there with Vinny. They're mad keen of hugely passionate now, Monaghan people. You have Dermot McArdle, former teammate and Monaghan player, and you could just see the amount of effort that they put in to improving that group of players in 4 weeks, because they were so probably, I'd say Vinny was just really, really distraught after that semi-final. You know, just forget about everything else. Again, he wasn't patting himself on the back because, oh, we're a small pucky county. He was disgusted that he put out a team that performed so badly. And they just put so much in to get that performance. And it was probably the performance of the year, considering where they were, where they brought that to. And it really now turns that group on its head. You know, looking forward, Derry now have to go to Donegal, who've got their wind in their sails after a win in Clare. We've got Clare and Clonus. So it's very exciting for Monaghan, but I think it's really exciting for the group, and it's a real shot in the arm for this new system as well, because as you said, Will, at the start, the championship's up and running, but it'll really take probably the next two or three rounds that the games themselves play and have a wee bit more meaning to them, because the early stages is a wee bit of shadow boxing and teams getting over their provincial hangover. Like there probably was an element from Derry and Armagh, but it's easy to reverse engineer that argument once they've had a bad game, because the opposite often applies as well. It didn't impact Galway, for instance, who put in a very formidable performance against Tyrone. So it's, you know.
Yeah, well, Donegal, Galway are the only provincial champions who won their first group game, and considering it was Galway, you know, Kerry, Derry, you know, some big hitters there. Like, is there anything to that, or is it just a coincidence that the winners happened to, you know, not hit their straps in week one? Or was there maybe some sort of benefit to potentially not being out so close to the start?
It's a tricky one, and because it's the first year of a new system, I'd probably reserve judgment on it. Like, you know, if you take the Ulster final, you know, that undoubtedly pulled from the late, it had the emotionally and everything. And there's probably something in, like, if your provincial championship is very important to you, you could make that argument. But like, you couldn't really say that about Kerry. Do you know what I mean? Because they win it most of the time. And so why they were off is a different thing. So I think it's very early to make that call as to whether it's like, you know, somehow a bad thing to win the provincial championship. But maybe if you know, maybe there's a sense of teams looking down the line and say, well, look, there's only one team not getting through from this stage, and they might be taking a longer term view. So it could be something to do with that, but it's very early, Will. I'd be reluctant to sort of nail my colours to the mast on that one.
And from a Derry perspective, Dick, and you touch on it there, like they have a game against Donegal next weekend that looks a bit dangerous all of a sudden. Donegal, who had their mishaps earlier in the year, but they've kind of been able to lick their wounds kind of privately. They haven't had many games. They beat Clare. They're at home, Ballybuffet. Like, would you give them a chance of springing an upset on Derry?
Yes, because of and I've touched on this in my column later today, for obvious reasons, you know, talking about Rory Gallagher has been challenging from a columnist upon this point of view, and people have avoided it. But in pure footballing terms, from Derry going forward, his absence from the sideline has to have a major impact. And we'll just talk about that and nothing else. Like, if you give him credit from bringing them from basically a basket case Division 4 side a number of years ago to where they're at now, and that same person now is gone, that has to have a negative impact on Derry. And there's a potential we're starting to see that. They weren't impressive in the Ulster final, right? An average Armagh team, which Armagh, with every game in terms of their relegation from Division 2, they were very, very average at home against Westmeath. An average Armagh team should have beaten them, really, in the Ulster final. And I'd say Armagh, if you were to give anyone a pass in terms of all Ulster final or provincial hangover, be Armagh, Donegal, because they would have been very flat after having left behind a massive opportunity. And I know that having lost Ulster final, it's very hard to pick yourself up for the next game in the qualifiers. Derry should have been sort of bouncing because they won it in the 2 weeks to recover. They just looked like they only for Shane McGuigan, like really and truly, like they were beaten and probably could have been beaten, not comfortably, but by 3 or 4 points. Like he was just, you know, he's borderline unmarkable at this stage, both in terms of his scoring from play and his range and freeze. He hit 8 points, I think, especially and a couple of monster points at the end. Other than that, they were, you know, visibly sort of at a lower ebb, and as they were, I would have felt in the Ulster final. So I'd just be worried for Derry. Is that going to have a bigger impact than people maybe have been sort of willing to talk about today? And I think we need to talk about that if we're just going to talk about from their All-Ireland credentials. So going up to Donegal, like, there's no love lost in Donegal. I you ask the Tyrone boys, ask, you know, Derry boys in the past, going up to Ballybuffet, you know, Donegal will sort of, you know, they'll be out in their droves now because they've something to play for. They probably thought their season was gone. They got a win against the Head in Clare when they could have lost it, and they'll probably just throw themselves in behind the team to try and get a victory, because it'll not be pretty. It'll be 15 men behind the ball, it'll be attritional, and Donegal will say, well, this is the only way we can sort of maybe beat this Derry team. But they can, and if Derry don't get back up to the pitch that they had been at, I think you could see a surprise there, you know.
Yeah, I did a couple of pieces over the last few weeks with fellas from Derry, Fergal McCusker being one, the 93 Fergal McCusker, and Damien McLaren last week. And they both made the point that they thought, in terms of the offensive output, which is where Derry fell down last year, I think it was 1-6 they got against Galway in the All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah.
They thought they were adding to it a little bit. Both said it separately. Like, I think, no, I think they're getting a wee bit better, or getting a little bit more structured than now you're doing. And I suppose that was the evolution of Derry for 2023. That's where they had to go. They had to get better at that side of things to progress this year. And in that context, if you look at what the Rory Gallagher coach Donegal did in 11 in the All-Ireland semi-final against Dublin, where they put up that bizarre puzzle that we'd nearly never seen before, and Dublin just about figured it out. And the following year, they came back and they had added that offensive side to their game. You'd think that that's what Derry were trying to do again this year on the Rory Gallagher. And now he's gone. And that's going to wash out over the next couple of weeks. But I think I agree with Dick. I think it just has to be significant. You know, again, just purely in a football context, you lose the head of the operation in any company, organization at all. You lose the head of the setup. It's going to be have a trickle down effect. Although, albeit Kieran Mina comes with a very good CV, hugely respected from people who I've been talking in and around. It takes something off them, definitely. And it could be tricky. Derry at their best, I think, will pick that apart, because I think Donegal have a bit of ground to make up. But if they're not at their best, yeah, it's Ballybuffet at the best of times is tricky.
And Dick, you know, you mentioned Armagh there and maybe giving them a bit of a pass because of the Ulster final, but at the same time, like, really struggled to beat Westmeath. It was a late goal that really proved decisive in the end. And, you know, Armagh last year against Galway in the quarterfinal, they played really well. It looked like they were a coming team, but it's been a very stuttering year. You mentioned they got relegated, leaving that Ulster final behind them. Now they go to Tyrone, which is probably one of the games of the weekend, but their season could really unravel. And they're a team that have always promised a lot, but you've been quite critical of them on this podcast, maybe not delivering on that.
Well, it just felt they were being put up a wee bit to a too much higher standing that they deserved, again, probably because of the McGeaney, and that they have an All-Ireland tradition, or a relatively recent tradition, but they had nothing really to back it up. Now, in fairness to them, they did bounce back from relegation to get to an Ulster final, which was a milestone that they had failed to do for so long. Now, again, they would have felt they left that behind them. I think that Derry was definitely there to be beaten, and I'd say that is tough. Like, I know from losing a couple of Ulster finals when you were sort of throwing an awful lot of energy, it's very hard to lift yourself. So I'm giving them a pass on that. But the problem is, Tyrone aren't going to give them a pass. They're going to Omagh now. That Tyrone, equally as a county and as a team, they are backs against the wall as well in terms of trying to if they're still haven't got over their All-Ireland win. And what I mean by that is got back up to that level to knock off any accusations that they got a lucky All-Ireland. Like, they haven't backed it up in any way, shape or form. And it's, again, that as you say, that could be the game of the weekend. There'd be a lot of history there, a lot of bad blood. That both teams aren't adverse to the dark arts if needed, and there's an awful lot at stake now for both teams. Not just that they probably still could eke out a third place to get in the quarter. Both teams need a win. They need a win and a good win against a good team to try and give them something to build on. Like Tyrone, I think even on this podcast, somebody talked about them being a potential team to do a run, and maybe it was the Sunday game. I've seen nothing that justifies that mantle that they could do a run to an All-Ireland based on what I've seen before. But if they put up a big performance, get a bit of form, get a bit of consistency, and no better time to do it than against their arch rivals Armagh at home in a sun-kissed home on Saturday evening.
Tyrone are funny because, like, if you look at the team, they absolutely have the tools. You know what I mean? You look at paper, you look at some other teams, and, you know, instead of coming around to Dick's way of thinking of Armagh now, you know, I kind of thought they were going to be a real puzzle for anyone in the latter stages. But watching most of that game yesterday, you know, the good teams would have figured that out a lot not quicker than they did, I suppose, is what I'm going to say. But the Tyrone, like, have good players in every line, top of the line, good system, physically there. And no more than in the couple of weeks in the build up to the Kerry All Ireland semi final, get the bit between their teeth, maybe a chip on their shoulder, they can get very dangerous very quickly. Since that All Ireland final, probably last year's All Ireland final, defence was as meek as we've seen. It's very, very hard to remember a less impressive one over the last 10, 15, 20 years. But they are better than they've shown. So if they can find that little spark, and maybe Armagh and Omagh is exactly that.
Yeah, and I think the problem with Tyrone is they've lost a number of players from the All Ireland. You know, Clark went back.
Kieran McCann,
these guys, a lot of panel players that, okay, in other counties, but these guys are good quality, can add something. Callum McShane, I don't know, he's just disappeared, whether it's form or there's something else going on. Like, he was an all-star a number of years back, he's just not in the reckoning at all. So, I don't know, just a big question mark. Just an interesting one on Armagh, and I think it hasn't been covered enough because people get sort of hoodwinked into the impressiveness of Stephen Rafferty and goals for Armagh. Like, when Armagh sort of popped their heads up a couple of years ago, right, there was none of that carry on, all right? They were playing fast, forward football, letting the ball into Rian O'Neill. Remember that breakthrough game against Dublin in Croke Park? And they played that type of football and it was very impressive, very easy to watch. Since this carry on with Stephen Rafferty, I think that hasn't helped them. I think it's too easy now for the players out the field to just throw it back to the extra man, and it just slows their whole play down. And I just don't think it's added an awful lot of value to them. Yes, you might look at the stats and Rafferty gets up and hits the odd point and it's all this and this is great. But in terms of trying to play that front foot football that they showed a couple of years ago that they could play and were very dangerous, I think that's taken away from their game. As for the rest of the 14 players, they've all slowed down a wee bit because there's Stefan. Instead of putting the head up, taking that kick inside, they're just throwing it back, and it's too easy. It's too, they've just dropped a level. That's my own sense on it, you know.
The Rian O'Neill thing's funny too, Dick. Like, you know, he's one of those fellas who can do a bit of everything. So he kind of pops up in loads of different places. Yeah. But as used when he in that game you're mentioning, the direct ball was going into Rian O'Neill, and once he got it, you know, it's sort of he's in control, and he's. You know, he's at his most dangerous there anyway, I would say.
He has to come out the pitch now to get the ball.
That's the point I'm making. Yeah. And it's maybe a little bit like the Michael Murphy thing. It's kind of like, where do you put him? But, you know, again, just from just purely a neutral and watching the game, you want Rian O'Neill inside close to the goal. And that's probably where I would say he's most dangerous. But, you know, the modern game's all sort of puzzles and moving parts and people trying to outfox each other and stuff like that. So, yeah.
It is. I think there's, again, we're probably running on time, but if you look at the teams that eventually win All-Irelands, right, the Dublins, the Kerrys, even the Tyrones are the top teams now, that's not necessarily a massive part of the game. you know, their keeper will come out a bit and act as a bit of a sort of a sweeper, or but he's not this carry on. He's playing like a you know, an extra midfielder, and you know, they're still very much are basically putting the trust in the men that are good enough to wear a number from 2 to 15. As I think Darrell O'Shea wrote a column a few years ago with these keepers playing out the field, I said, if you're good enough to play out there, you know, put a jersey on you between 8, 9, 10, or 11. If not, do your job in goals. You know, and to be fair to Ethan Ratter, he had the chance to be an outfield player for Armagh and he wasn't deemed good enough. And now he's, and so I just think for Armagh, that's my own opinion on it, hasn't really brought them on a whole pile, even though it all looks very impressive when he gets up and kick a point. You know, it should be the forwards doing that, in my opinion.
Dick's old school.
I'm not old school, Jesus, maybe I am.
Old school, 2015 old school.
Yeah.
Well, next weekend, it's set to be a cracker. We have Tyrone Armagh as part of a triple header with Cork, Kerry and Kildare Dublin on Saturday, and then Donegal Derry on Sunday. I mean, I think every team basically is in action between the Talchin Cup and the All-Ireland Series, so plenty to look forward to next weekend. But for the moment, I'd like to thank Dick and Dunica for joining me on this week's episode of the Throwing Football Show. We'll be back next week to reflect and all the action, and in the meantime you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or listen on independent.ie. and until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.